Well, it's really wonderful to be here with you this morning, Vanessa. We've come to know each other over the last couple of years, and it's been really exciting finding out about what you do. So today, we just want to have a discussion with you, learn more about ESPID, about yourself, about activities that you're planning for the year. It's all very exciting.
Well, thank you, Grant, first of all, for inviting me. And secondly, I just want to say it's a pleasure working with you on anything because it's always such fun and you're always full of excitement and good vision. So,
Thank
yeah,
you.
we'll be very pleased to work together.
Thank you very much. So let's touch base on a few things. I saw on your Instagram you've recently been to Egypt and got back yesterday or the day before.
Yes.
So.
Oh, well, that was a very fast trip for me. I was invited by the British Embassy to go to Egypt and represent British interior design in Cairo at an event that they called Inspire Egypt. And the event was held at the ambassador's residence, which was sort of the old colonial days, if you see it from the building.
Yes.
Amazing building. And it really was, when I've never been to Cairo before, and for me it was a little bit like being in a sort of Agatha Christie movie. It was so much like that. The cars were all, higgledy-piggledy, and yet when there was all this grandeur of architecture and the Nile and everything there, it was wonderful to see it like that. And I stayed in a beautiful new hotel. So you have this. We stayed at the Kempinski, which is directly next to the British Embassy, and you have this wonderful investment of new architecture and new buildings next to the sort of old style. And the ambassador had gathered the best of interior designers from Egypt for this event. There were about 700 guests in the garden of the ambassador's residence. It was amazing. It was wonderful, and the people are so warm and really so talented. So, it's a gap that Britain didn't have with Egypt in terms of trade. I think they were all saying that before 2008-9, when the global credit crunch happened, many of them had got manufacturing trade agreements and various different deals for the UK in terms of selling and buying. And the designers loved working with us. And the architects had contracts for building there. But when that happened in 2008-9, it all sort of fell apart. And so I feel we've now got, in a new decade, a new chance to rebuild those gaps and start to get involved with what they're investing and building in Egypt, and bring that also bring that talent into the UK as
Into
well.
the UK. That's great. As you know, I love to travel.
Yes.
Absolutely love to travel. And the first thing I do is, find the sort of contemporary art museum and the local design center, and figure out, what does this place look like? How does it feel like? How does the design world work? So it's really exciting to hear that you're going to new places and seeing and exploring design, in and about those countries and the trade, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite interesting because I've spent a lot of time in my career in the Middle East and working with the Middle East, but I'd never been to Egypt, and it was quite interesting to see that they were more advanced than I had anticipated. And in Cairo at the moment, there's Gensler there constructing huge buildings and Savills, and I thought, well, here we are, it's sort of like busman's holiday,
Yes.
and we weren't involved, so it's great.
Okay, brilliant. So just thinking back to the UK and the interior design sector over here, how do you see the design sector unfolding in the next decade?
Well, firstly, I think that for the very first time, designers and people in general have a conscience. I would say in the previous decade, in the 90s, everybody wanted to show off. They wanted, if they had wealth, it was new wealth, they wanted everyone to know they had it. So it was the car, the shiny new, look at my house. And people were invited to come and see how fabulous everybody was. I think that this decade is different. People are not particularly interested in showing off. In fact, you see it in the clothes that people wear, and you see it in the design of public space, that everything's casual. And even like tabletop or furniture, it's mix and match, it's not sets. So that eclectic mix is very different, and that conscience says people are interested in how things are made. Yes, they still are interested, obviously, if you're in business, you have to be looking at the bottom line. But it's not the only driver. It's a social conscience on the things that are involved in making a business tick, giving back, looking after other people, being decent again. And I think that did get lost a little bit in the past.
Okay. I mean, that's very interesting. Businesses are under a lot of pressure over the last few years to perform. And, you know, we've seen some businesses sort of wobbling and maybe going under in the design world. And I think the design world had to readjust really quickly to make sure that businesses are making money with the new way that consumers want to buy, spend, invest in services.
Yes, I think that in the past, people, certainly the manufacturers, they had to comply with eco and green things. So they did it in terms of a tick box. They didn't necessarily have their heart and soul in it. Mm. And whereas now, they absolutely do. People want to be seen to be involved with saving and improving and looking after the future. And there's an absolute emphasis on building a business that's based on those credentials.
Sustainability is a huge word, and there's so many repercussions, and everyone in the sector, you know, has a responsibility to be thinking about it and what they can do about it. But, you know, the word is so big. How do small firms, medium firms, large firms even start to understand what they need to do, how they can do it? The word's quite daunting in a way.
Yeah, I agree with you completely on that. And I think it's also become a little bit of a parody as a word. And it's a bit like, iconic, or we were saying recently about things being, you know, more beautiful, or these are generic words that are overused and then they lose their substance. But sustainability is something that affects everything throughout, from the beginning of the idea to the end user. So it is a sort of cradle to grave process. And I think that it's not just during the use of a product or a design. Let's talk about the products that go into a design. It's not just about the use of them. It's when their use is over, then what happens? And if we take electrical goods, there were all those fridges years ago, and we had fridge mountains of all the gases and what became of them. And so the end use of those products, how do we upcycle them? And the things with plastic, you can only recycle plastic once, and therefore what happens then? It's all got to go somewhere. And yet we're so great at technology and manufacturing and processing ideas. Why hasn't anyone designed how to, you know, remodel plastic into something else? That's one of our big things.
I think, you know, technology is important in this sector. I think technology is a huge tool that the design world needs to learn and understand how to use to make projects and products more sustainable.
Absolutely. And I think that today, the designers are as aware of it as the end users, as the clients are. And everybody wants to buy and be involved in a sustainable process or a sustainable product. And if you can't demonstrate that, then your product or your business will struggle. So,
I mean, one of the things that I've noticed is with my interior design clients is that if an end client is sort of 35 and under, that word sustainability is very high up on their I want list.
Yes.
Whereas sort of post 40, that doesn't really happen in those conversations. And I think for interior designers that are looking to build their businesses over the next 10, 15 years, you need to be investing in that younger crowd who are going to be with you for those years. So you need to start paying attention to this.
Absolutely. Those designers are looking at that age group as a clientele. That age group are usually young parents, so their emphasis is on the world they leave for their children. Mm. And for businesses, they're looking at how long something lasts, and therefore the world, what will the world look like in 10, 15, 20 years' time? And the shift in how we use things has gone from you know, coal to heat houses to gas and electric to now everything being from the it's almost from the globe as opposed to in it. Yes. So sun, wind and sea, sun, wind and water are the three things that are money front loaded in terms of the investment to deliver. But once they've been created, they're free. Yes. You know, and so, yes, we've got to build the farms and we've got to do all those things to create it. But actually, we're not taking out of the earth as we were with gas and coal and all those other things. So it is
a source. Yes. So this year, I know that ESPID are really focusing on climate change.
Yes.
There's a lot of things happening throughout the year that ESPID are involved in. Can you tell us a little bit more about those initiatives, what ESPID is really championing and focusing on this year?
Well, the climate change affects not only the consumer, but also the business, and therefore the research and development of the products that go into both residential or domestic design and contract commercial design. So we thought, and we worked with the government on this and universities over the last 4 years, and looked at what will the world look like in 10 years' time? Will we still be using the style and type of products that we're using now? So we looked at the built environment, which I'm quite passionate about, because whereas there's more people in the world, you know, 15% more people in the world now than 10 years ago, 15 years ago, if you look at that continued huge growth and the reapportionment of those people from different countries due to war and climate into other areas, we've got an overload. So, for example, the UK, you know, we've got 10 million people more in the UK than we had 15 years ago. That's a huge number that need to be housed, fed and given work. And therefore, we're looking at how will we cover, reproportion what the built environment looks like. So we need to build more housing and we need to create jobs and the social environment for them, schools and etc. And if we look at that, then we also need to look at how will we, when we're building those houses, how will we heat them and where does that energy come from for all of those things? And that made us start to look with the government at what would a designer be specifying to go into a home? So if the architect designs the way it looks, but the government designed the way it's heated and all the other utilities that go into it, then what would we as designers look at to make it function in terms of, let's take just a kitchen, you know, the hob, the oven, the fridge. And so we looked at the manufacturers and looked at the investment that they were putting into their products. And we looked at, over the last 10 years, water-saving products in the showers and, you know, water-saving, you know, the aerator on a tap so you use less water. But we then looked at, with the universities, the design of buildings where they're built in. Houses will be built in blocks, let's say what we'd call an average terrace. It might have a solar panel on the top of a building that will heat 10 houses, but the energy in the house and the intelligence of the house will note that when the house is empty, it can drop the use, so it doesn't need to heat or it doesn't need to give so much electricity to the fridge because it's not going to be opened and all those things, and then the grid will store that and it will feed it back into the next terrace. So there's so many different things that the way we're building properties and the way we're using the appliances within the properties is the way that is the way forward that we're looking at. And we think that by working with the manufacturers as designers, we can say, yes, that would work. You may have the technology and you may be investing in building a fridge or a hob in a certain way. But as a designer, we know that our clients don't want that.
Yes.
So, or we wouldn't specify it because X, Y, Z. So that collaboration means that they don't invest so much money in a product to then throw it away. And we end up with a product that we get to market faster. So as you know, innovators, we sort of change the direction quickly.
And towards the end of the year, you're participating in COP26.
Yes.
Can you tell us what that is? And sort of, you know, that's a huge thing to be involved in. and it really should be celebrated, and I want to talk about it.
So, okay, yeah. That's great. Well, COP26 is something, it's a seminar that's hosted in Glasgow by the government in November. Because I didn't know this until we were got involved with this, but mm-hmm. Glasgow is one of the most sustainable cities in the UK. Amazing.
Interesting. Gosh, you'd never think no. that, would you?
And we have something like 300 delegates from around the world that are sort of leaders in their country that are coming to talk about sustainability. And the talks are being run throughout this two-week seminar. By Italy. They're hosting it. So we partnered with Italy. I know, we're in the middle of global lockdown, but thank goodness Italy are pioneers of design and product design. Yes. They are great at product design. And if you're selling anything and you say it's Italian and it's got an I or an O on the end, it's got an extra value to it, yes. You know. So they're hosting all the talks throughout the 2 weeks. And we said, well, let's work with you with your products and work with companies in Italy that are manufacturing products. And then let's bring together the designers and manufacturers in the UK and talk about, you know, the link, because there isn't a strong enough link as to the way forward. And then talk about that with governments, but global governments, as to how we can change their aspirations of what the world will look like in 10 and 15 and 30 years' time. And what we see of how housing and houses and people will live in 10 or 15 years' time. For example, there's no point in making a tap that will last for 25 years if we only use it for 5, you know, because it's got a 5-year program to refurbish everything. So that's over engineering. And if we can talk to each other to make sure that we manufacture and design not only the aesthetic, but the function and the transportation of these things so that they fit the people that will be using them, so the people that are living in them and the way that people live, so it's not two people and two children and a dog. It's predominantly smaller families in whatever, you know, denomination we call a family at the moment. It's very different. And what will that look like in 20 years' time? Will we be all living in one unit, or will it be single units as it's sort of gearing towards at the moment? So it's more about sharing the ideas so that we all travel in the right direction together, and we don't spend money duplicating the same ideas, which costs money.
So you're giving a sort of commercial product manufacturers so much insight through your experience with designers, with building houses, with property developers, with architects, and that's an incredible body of knowledge which is going to help with things like sustainability, with tech. I mean, you just said the example earlier, you know, a tap doesn't need to last 25 years anymore, because, you know, in these new builds or whatever, it is every 5 or 7 years that their bathrooms are being changed around. And I think manufacturers just don't have access to that information at all.
Exactly. And therefore, they may lose a sale because they've made something by over-engineering it, to a cost that then puts them out of a budget market for the type of client or buyer that were, you know, that you could have the same tap, one manufactured for a 5-year warranty and one for 20 years, for example.
Yeah.
And there's many other different reasons and ways that we can help manufacturers work with designers and then work with the construction section of global development, and also taking in, you know, climate. And if you look at, you know, the amount of heat in, you know, it's 30 degrees regularly in the UK. We never had that before. It's 40 and 45 in the Middle East regularly in the summer, you know. And we look at what's happened in Australia this Christmas. And so this change, and the Arctic, where we're losing polar bears, they haven't got anywhere to stand, and these changes, if we don't actually make use of this knowledge before we hit it, it's too late. And so by talking with global leaders, and the United Nations have pulled this together, which they do regularly, so they have set 17 goals, And from the 17 goals, we as designers are involved in 15 of them. And then they are social goals that we won't necessarily be involved in as a designer, necessarily, you know, taking that into a client's project. But on a social basis, we absolutely are. So it's things like, you know, hunger. How do we distribute the food to people, and how do we house those people, and then what does that look like in terms of income for those people? So these 15 goals are that we're working with are very important for manufacturers, because it means that they can design their products to fit what the world will look like.
So how will the issue of climate change affect the interior design industry in general practice?
I think because we need to heat and cool our homes differently, and we have to look at the cost of doing that, and we have to look at the impact on the environment as well, and we have to look at the fact that will there be enough jobs for people? We have to look at how much does it cost to build a home? How long will we work in order to live? If we're living longer, how will we earn enough money in a shortened, let's say we all start working a four-day week and we're earning less money, how will we live if we live longer? You know, so we've got a shorter time frame to earn the income to take care of ourselves, and we know that governments aren't going to do that. So these types of issues means that we've got to look at accommodation in general, income in a big way, and transient lifestyle, because the climate is changing too. And it's such a big thing. It's really too big to speak in. It's such a big subject that if we're looking at wind and sea, let's take cars, for example. We will no longer have diesel or petrol. So all the cars will be electric in the next 10 years. The governments are all expecting that by 2030, every car built will be an electric car, which means that we've got to already start to build the environment across the country where we have the charging units. At the moment, we're looking, who's going to pay for the charging unit? Is it the council, or is it the car manufacturer? And then, or is it the user? Who's going to put the charging posts in, and how do we cover all those things? So in this transient time, there's a big opportunity for manufacturers to grow. But it's also such a threat for those, like anything to do with technology. If you don't keep up, you are going to be a dinosaur. So looking at car manufacturers now, there's so many out there. Many of them won't survive. And I feel that this is our moment, looking and talking to designers and manufacturers in the design industry, that we can bring them a knowledge and a vision for their future so that they don't die off.
Yeah, well, I think that's a really good place to sort of end this discussion, because I think that really is the key. You know, I think designers and manufacturers have for the last 20 years been operating in the same way.
Yes.
And what we've realized is that ways to generate new clients for our clients who are interior designers has changed rapidly over the last 2 to 3 years, hugely changed. I think it comes down to processes and materials and which brands are actually going to be around, you know, in the next 5 years. So you've got to keep your eye on what's happening in the sort of macro environment, because it is going to affect your business.
And it's global, where we didn't trade globally. I mean, Brexit, no one mentions Brexit anymore. It's gone, and it's only a month, you know. Yeah. But yeah, really, we're now trading not as an island in the UK. We're trading as a global country, and the world is very hot in some places and not in others. And we have to look at all of these different aspects. And I really think that if we don't look forward, it will catch up and bite us. You know, and we'll struggle.